Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Take a Stab at It. I'm your host, John Hoyer, and with me, as always, is the ravishing but infuriating Jason Bartsch.
Hey, you teed me up this time. I like it.
Yeah, you like that? Work at it.
Ravishing and infuriating. I think it said that under my yearbook photo in high school as well.
You contain multitudes. So I thought that was a very good way to introduce you. How you been?
Good, man. Episode 4. How you feeling?
We're rocking it, right?
Heck yeah, man.
We're making so much podcast money. Not real, folks.
I'll to check my bank account because maybe the deposit didn't come through yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jason, what have you been watching this week?
So I recently watched a film, which I recommended to you, and I don't think you've watched it yet. It's from 2018. It's a sci-fi horror film on Netflix called Await Further Instructions. And it kind of starts out as a dysfunctional family drama and morphs into something pretty terrifying. So it's basically a son comes home with his Indian girlfriend, and there's a lot of racial tension. Mm-hmm. And the next morning, this is over Christmas, the next morning they go to leave this family function, and the entire house has been covered in this impenetrable black membrane, and they're all trapped in there, basically. And they start receiving messages on the TV. The first one says, stay calm and await further instructions. And it ends up kind of being this hybrid of like 10 Cloverfield Lane meets Saw. They kind of have these tasks they have to complete, and it kind of, you know, puts everyone against each other. And it's really interesting to kind of see this family drama play out in the middle of this sci-fi horror. And there's kind of these contrasting elements of the father kind of believes everything the TV is saying and thinks it's, mm-hmm. it's the government trying to communicate. They're under attack. They're trying to keep us safe. And then everyone else or other people are like, you know, this is very bad. Let's try to get out of this. These people are messing with us. They're not trying to help us. So I think it's just interesting from a perspective of, you know, kind of how we consume information, how we consume media. And some people just take everything as gospel. And then there's other people that kind of want to dive deeper. And it's like, you know, why are we in this situation? Like, how can we get out? You know? So I recommend it. I recommended it to you before, and I will recommend it again. But
I don't. When did you recommend this to me?
It was months ago. Months ago.
Okay, because I'm trying to think, like, not to peel back the curtain too much here, folks. He's doing a pretty good job selling me on it right now, and I feel like, why would I have? Why did I ignore it?
I ask myself the same question. I feel like I gave you a very similar pitch originally.
I'll go watch it. So you rewatched it, or you are just like trying to?
I didn't really watch anything this week, so I had to go. I had to go back in the old vault. But yeah, no, it's in the genre. I thought it was applicable to the podcast, so okay. Well, I recommend it.
Sounds great, and I'll watch it this week probably.
I think you would really like it. I really do. Well, the one thing I don't like about it is the trailer and even the poster art kind of just gives away the climax of the film.
Oh, okay.
And it's pretty surprising when you haven't seen that. So if you can avoid it, but knowing Netflix, when you go to hover over it, it probably shows that same clip. So knows?
Just, I don't know if you know this, but if you go into the settings for Netflix on your browser, you can actually get rid of the, like, it plays the trailers, which I did that, and Netflix experience is so much better now. They're not nothing's yelling at you when you're looking.
That's
to
great.
See.
Well, I'm even talking about just like the thumbnail for the film, because that I mean that alone. Yeah, if you watch it, I would say if you can just watch it without viewing any trailers or looking at anything about it, and right. then
when know. I hit play, I will just make my eyes go out of focus. I'll take my glasses off, hit play, put my glasses back on so I don't see it.
Fair enough.
All right,
so what have you been watching?
All right, so your pal John over here watched a movie called She Dies Tomorrow. So
okay,
that's the new movie by writer, director, actress Amy Simetz. And it's a very weird movie. It's almost, it's borderline experimental, but it's kind of a horror kind of genre-y exercise about a woman who has a feeling that she's going to die tomorrow. I know it's a very misleading title. And she tells a friend about it. And then the idea kind of gets in the friend's head. And then she feels weird and wants to be around other people. So she tells some other friends. And then it gets in their head. And then it's all of them kind of dealing with this idea of what it would mean if, like, this is like the final hours of their life.
So everyone starts to collectively feel like they're going to die tomorrow.
Yeah. And wow. It's weird because it's not really, the logic of it isn't really, the movie's not really that focused on trying to like sell you on that logic as much as the experience of what that feels like for these characters. Okay. And it's also, I'm kind of making it maybe seem a little bit more serious than it is. So there's like a lot of like comedic elements in the movie as well. And, you know, like characters that are like in a relationship, when they start thinking about, oh, I'm going to die tomorrow. Oh, we should both be honest with ourselves that this relationship wasn't really going to last anyway, or like something, you know, things like that. And it's really cool. It's a very low budget film, but also there's a lot of like trippy visual, like images and stuff. And it's interesting because the film is kind of was recorded before the pandemic, but it feels like it's very much like a response to the pandemic.
Interesting.
So, you know, the original idea, I think, was that Amy Simetz bought a house and she was like thinking about like the responsibility of owning a house and all these things that could go wrong that would all be left to her as opposed to like, you know, a landlord or something. Interesting idea that I would probably be very worried about myself.
Yeah.
But now it's more like, oh, it's the impending doom of a pandemic. So
right, you know. No, that sounds really apropos. What, so Amy Simetz, what would we know her from anything else, or is this a,
so she was a actress in Upstream Color. She also was in Pet Sematary, the remake.
Okay.
And she did she directed two episodes of Atlanta, and then,
oh nice,
a lot of episodes of The Girlfriend Experience that was on Stars, which I've been a pretty big fan of. First season's great. Second season's kind of okay. Like,
okay,
good, but not as good as the first season. First season was amazing.
What's up with Atlanta? Is that coming back?
I have no idea.
Jeez.
It seems like the longer that Donald Glover waits on this, the rest of the cast will get really famous and then not want to do it anymore.
The more famous everyone's getting, including Donald Glover.
All right. So let's move on to our review of The Wicker Man.
The main event, Wicker Man.
Oh, yeah.
So Wicker Man is a psychological horror musical, I guess you could say. I will say when I rewatched it, I did not remember there was quite as much singing. And
it's great.
It is great. I love it. It's like a 72-minute film, and there's probably 10 to 12 minutes of singing. That's like 15% of the movie. So I don't know if what the percentage is that qualifies as a musical, but,
and 10% of that singing is about how much they all the people at the bar want to have sex with the landlord's daughter.
Exactly. So Wicker Man, the synopsis of this film is, an anonymous letter sends Sergeant Neil Howie to the mysterious island of Summer Isle in search of a missing girl named Rowan Morrison. While attempting to gain information, Howie soon finds himself wrapped up in the sexual debauchery and strange pagan rituals of the island's residents. So John, what did you think about this film?
Well, Jason, I thought it was a great film. The filmmaking is kind of workmanlike, so it's not a very visually striking film, but the story unfolds in such an interesting and clever way that I don't think you really notice that. And I think there's like a real sense of unease as you watch Sergeant Howie investigate Rowan's disappearance. So the villagers are distrustful and you feel like they're hiding something, but also they're really fun to watch, especially Christopher Lee as Lord Summer Isle.
Oh yeah, he's great. I like what you're saying, that how the filmmaking is workmanlike. It's kind of, I guess, bare bones. Like the story is kind of what matters.
Mm-hmm.
And I did think there were some visuals that were pretty memorable to me when Sergeant Howie first arrives at the island, he arrives by plane, one of those planes that can like land on water. I'm sure there's a term for it. So our aviator stabbies out there will be writing me mean letters, but he kind of lands and it's this really long telephoto shot of the island, basically from his perspective. And it's kind of rocking in the water. And you just kind of see these townspeople kind of encroaching on, you know, the landing. And, the first time I watched it, it just made me feel really uneasy. Like if this guy ends up on this island, he's not getting off. Like there's no way this dude's getting off this island. So I think there were shots like that throughout that just kind of added to the unease. And it was interesting because not until the very end, I would say, does Howie seem like he feels that he's in danger, mm-hmm. you know? So it's almost like us as the viewers kind of, you know, feel for him a little bit more. Like he's just kind of going about this as a routine investigation, but it's like, as the viewers, we're like, this is pretty unsettling what we're seeing.
Because it's on paper, it's supposed to be more like a culture clash, but mm-hmm. really there's something more seems to be going on, and it's just kind of a feeling that you can sense.
Yeah. So I mean, I love the film. I thought it was great as well. You know, it is interesting to see kind of the clash in between Christianity and these pagan rituals, because Sergeant Howie is a very kind of devout conservative Christian, and these pagan rituals kind of, you know, they involve public displays of nudity and sex, and he's just really kind of taken aback by all of this. And so yeah, I don't know. I get what you're saying, that it wasn't too visually striking, but there at the same time, there are some very memorable shots and some memorable scenes. Even without all the flashy cinematography, I think a lot of what they're trying to do really lands.
Well, it's interesting how that works, though, because it kind of gives a greater sense of reality and authenticity to what you're watching. You don't feel like you're not as overtly aware of being manipulated
right.
by this kind of style.
I like the scene, you mentioned it earlier, where Howie first gets into town and he goes into the bar. He's just looking for a meal and a place to stay. And they all just kind of break out into song about, you know, how much they want to sleep with the bartender's daughter. And it's like, it's so odd, but like everyone's in on it. And like, like everyone knows all the words and people have specific parts too.
And like the old guy with no timing starts singing, and everyone's like, okay, let's go.
Like, how many times have they done this? And it just makes you feel so uncomfortable. Like if you would go into a bar on this remote island and everyone breaks out into this song.
And the girl Willow, she loves it. She finds it so entertaining.
She loves the spotlight. She's loving the attention. So kind of going back to a technical thing, the music kind of works as like diegetic sound, but also non-diegetic. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of more of like a film school term, but diegetic sound is basically, you know, anything that is naturally coming from the film. You know, it could be like mm-hmm. music playing on a radio, or in this case, singing. But I feel like this kind of transitions from diegetic sound of people singing into almost like a score at times, where it's so overpowering. It's like all you hear. And you know, mm-hmm. the scene where Howie's trying to sleep and Willow is trying to kind of seduce him by singing through the walls. It's just, I don't know. It's so bizarre how we kind of hear this song and we see Howie's reaction to everything.
Yeah. So like to give a little context, Sergeant Howie goes to his room. He's saying his prayers and we get some flashbacks to him at his church, and he's speaking and then getting the host. I'm Catholic and I don't know the right terms for all this stuff. Anyway, he's there. He's thinking about this stuff. He's praying. And then Willow, she goes to her room and she calls his name, goes into the room. She starts singing and dancing naked. And yeah, Sergeant Howie, he's not having a good time of it.
Nope, he's not having it.
He's like sweating like crazy. Like it was a little funny though. Like he's going crazy. He's grabbing the walls as she's singing. and that's
one of the parts where like this diegetic sound that's actually happening in the film kind of turns more into a score, because when we see him in his own room with walls all around him, we still hear this singing as clear as if she was right there in the room with him. And I think that kind of adds to the sense of how like overwhelmed he is with everything.
Do you know the actress who played Willow? There's three different actresses that play Willow.
Really?
Okay. So there's the lady, like the lady you physically see.
Uh-huh.
Then they have a different woman doing the voice of her.
Okay.
And then the third woman is the one who's singing. Wow. So
interesting. But we only see one on screen.
Yeah, you only see one on screen. Okay. Yeah, so she's singing, dancing, naked, which is kind of odd because it's not like that can really be conveyed to him that she's naked because he's right in the other room. But
do you think he knows? Do you think he has an idea? I think he probably knows.
Maybe
that she's naked.
He could hear like in the tone of her voice. He's a very good cop, so he can hear in the tone of her voice that there's not lot of fabric between them.
She's in her birthday suit. Yeah.
It's just so he just comes off like such a coward because it's like, I don't know, like he's like just drenched in sweat, like trembling.
So you would just go for it.
Would I just go for it?
You would just go for it. Yeah, like you're there on official business. You're looking for a room and you just want to have some dinner and go to sleep. You would
here's what would happen.
Here's what happened. Okay.
I would like to think that I would be like, you know, Mr. Stud over here, but like more than likely I would just hear her like singing and dancing. And like, I'm not a bit, you know, I'm not a guy who really pays too much attention to like lyrics of songs. So like, I wouldn't really understand that this is supposed to be like a song of seduction, that I just think she's like being very annoying and like hitting the walls. And I go, oh my God, go to sleep.
Yeah.
And, you know, then the next day when she like makes it very clear that she wanted him to come in, if I was in that position, I'd be like, oh.
Oh. You'd be like, then, one more night, please, shopkeep.
And then she would be like, listen, you know what? You're a dud.
I wasted a whole song on you.
Yeah.
Well, we should also mention the fact that that Howie is a virgin and he's engaged. Which is, you know, I don't know if we want to get into this now, but it is part of the plot that will come up later.
Yeah. So he's, you know, I mean, I guess it's probably pretty noble that he's not cheating on his fiance. So I shouldn't make fun of him too much. But I would also think that you would, I would think that if you're pretty like, you know, satisfied with your life, that you wouldn't be like trembling at the thought of like, oh, this beautiful woman.
Yeah. Ooh. Or at least, you know, just stay in bed. Don't go like caress the wall or whatever. I don't know.
I love the little details of the next morning when Willow comes in to like when he wakes up and she's fixing all of the paintings that were on the walls because they're all like shook and crooked because of her gyrating against the wall.
She knows. This isn't the first time she's pulled that stunt.
It's just it's a little like ridiculous, but I don't know, I kind of love the scene. It's very it's a very interesting way to convey that information.
Yeah. So when Howie goes there, there's this interesting detail when he gets his dinner that will come up later. He remarks about how all the vegetables that he's received for dinner are canned.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this ends up being an important plot point because this island that's known for its crops had, you know, a very bad season and they did not have plentiful crops, which is is kind of where, you know, this cult and these rituals kind of then come into play. It's a lot of what they're doing has to do with the yield of the crops for that season.
The harvest.
Correct.
So as the film progresses, we watch Sergeant Howie meet different people in the town, and as he investigates the disappearance of Rowan, and eventually he finds that there is a gravesite for her. So he goes to Lord Summerisle to get his approval so that way he could exhume the body and see if she was in fact murdered or what was the real cause of death.
Right. And because no one's really giving him a straight answer. Everyone's,
well, they're, you know, even debating whether or not like she died. Because
yeah,
like,
well, they're like, like, dead? I wouldn't exactly say she was dead. You might say she's dead.
Yeah, everybody's like, okay. Well, let's just speak normal for a second. Like, is she, you know, breathing?
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, he goes to, this should be a major red flag. He goes to her mother and she's not concerned at all. And, you know, doesn't even seem to think that that's her daughter. And I don't know. And there's a lot of weird stuff going on. You know, she puts a frog in her daughter's throat to get rid of a sore throat. Is that a thing people did?
Yeah, I went through 3 frogs today. Come on.
You just thought it was normal your whole life.
Yeah, I used 3 different ones. I licked it once, got rid of it, got another, you know, they're like cough drops, right?
You don't have a linen closet at your house. You have a frog closet. This is why I've never been allowed over.
When they all make noises, it's really hard sleep.
Hard to get a good night's sleep.
You're making jokes about that, but that's actually how it is, but with cats or something. Anyway.
So how he goes to meet Lord Summerisle, who's a great character, Christopher Lee. He just knocks it out of the park with this role, and he's so memorable, but he doesn't even pop up until over halfway through the film. And I think that's just a testament to, you know, how much of a mark he leaves in that short time.
Well, so it's interesting. Actually, I believe it was the screenwriter of the film was working on the idea. The whole story was kind of based around the fact that Christopher Lee wanted to make a movie that was not like a Hammer horror film where he's playing like Dracula or something. He wanted to do like kind of a unique kind of horror story. So they wrote the role for him.
Yeah. So Lord Summerisle kind of fills Howie in on what's happening. And the whole interaction is very matter of fact. It's like, you know, well, why do you have all these naked chicks jumping over fire? Like, why is this happening? He's like, oh, like, you know, to ensure a plentiful autumn. Why else? And he's so confident in his beliefs and, you know, his faith that he has in these gods that are going to provide a good harvest. And
it's funny, you know, also, like, he's like saying it to him very like matter of fact, like, they're doing it for like, you know, fertility, obviously stupid.
Yeah,
that's what one does.
I think there's an interesting contrast with these two characters who have very different beliefs that are both very devout in what they believe. And whereas Howie is very, very strict and very rigid and very staunch in what he believes, and then Lord Summerisle is very kind of easygoing, charismatic, like charming guy who just like believes this stuff without a shadow of a doubt. And I think
he fully believes it though? Because I wonder, because he kind of infers later that his grandfather came up with the idea of like having like the villagers like worship the old gods as kind of a means of making them happy again.
Yeah. You could be onto something there. I mean, it's just seems like a lot of work to keep people happy. I don't know. There could be more manipulation behind his motives, you know, than he lets on. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I kind of feel like everybody on this island is on the same page and nobody's really questioning anything. Everyone's so damn happy, just singing songs. It's May Day. There's a song dancing around a maple. It's, you know, and like this whole time, it's just like, you feel so frustrated for Sergeant Howie because he's just trying to find this girl. And everywhere he goes, it's just nonsense, man. It's just people singing. It's just frogs and throats. It's naked people dancing over fires. And I don't know, man.
I think it's interesting, though, because I think this is getting maybe a little bit at our personality differences, because at every step of the way, as he's doing the investigation, I'm like, come on, man, have a little fun. Whereas you're over there going like, will he figure out what's the problem already?
Okay.
What's happening?
I'll give them their fun on the first night when it's into like day 2. And like everybody's still just dancing around, not really being helpful. Then it's time to get down to business. The first night, the first night, I'll give them that. The songs, the graveyard sex, have at it. When the sun comes up, let's help this man find this girl.
Yeah, I guess I would kind of, I feel a little differently where it's like, as soon as the mom's like, I don't know what you're talking about, I'd be like, all right.
You'd be like, I'm out of here. Whatever.
My business is done.
Yeah.
Where's Willow at? Hey. But it's interesting, just like the differences of how we kind of focusing our attention or what's kind of pulling us through the story a bit. But it's also, I would say, another interesting dynamic between the two characters, Lord Summerisle and Sergeant Howie, is that Lord Summerisle has his own, you know, belief system and whatnot, but he's not really that offended, or not really offended whatsoever, that like Sergeant Howie believes in something different from him. He's kind of just like, okay, you know, whatever. But like, yeah. Sergeant Howie is very like, what
How
are you
could
doing?
You believe that? Yeah.
And yeah. It's just an interesting just dynamic of seeing those two play off of one another, especially because Lord Summerisle is much more like flamboyant, joyful, and kind of, I mean, it's weird because you're like, oh, let's exhume a body. And he's like, haha, whatever.
Yeah. I will say in the context of the story, it makes sense why he's so kind of calm and cavalier through all of this. It's like, because everyone at the island intended for Howie to be here, and they all mm-hmm. know this the whole time. Essentially what happened is they wrote the letter. They encouraged him to come here on his own free will. And this all has to do with these rituals they have planned.
Yeah.
Because there's certain criteria for a sacrifice they must make.
I was trying to write out some of the criteria, like on our little note sheet, and I ended up giving up. I was like, no, like, you watch the movie, you'll get it. I'm not gonna be like, oh, he's part the clown and part the, you know.
Yeah, what are the bullet points? He's a virgin on his own free will, who's a fool. That was like the gist of it.
Also, he was like because he's a cop. That's another part. Like, he's a man of the king or something.
Yeah, yeah. So for one reason or another, this makes him an ideal candidate for a sacrifice, essentially. And mm-hmm. this sacrifice will result in a more plentiful harvest.
Yes.
So, well, that's interesting, too, how, like, don't you think they would have told Rowan's mom to just kind of play a little more scared? Like, it... You know, like, kind of play it up a little, like she is missing. Let's keep him busy for a little bit. But
yeah,
it's honestly like they're just toying with him at that point, which is so tragic. It's like, oh, I've never heard of her. And then like all the school kids are laughing at him because like they all lied to him about knowing her and stuff. And it's just they're just taunting this poor man.
I think the worst of it, the absolute worst of it. I mean, the worst of it is that they kill him. But before that, the worst of it is that he literally goes through every house looking for her, and they let him do all that legwork before, like...
Well, not only that, they mess with him while he's doing it. Like, the one kid, like, plays dead in the closet, and she, like, falls out, and they're like, ha ha ha, tricked you, you thought you found her body.
Oh, what a little bastard.
I know, right? A weenie.
But yeah, so... let's see. So let's get to the ending of this.
The ending. Arguably the most iconic scene of the film, and probably one of the more iconic scenes in all of horror, I would say.
Oh, yeah. You know, so for a lot of times when a movie is kind of like an older film from the 70s or 80s or whatever, when it comes to like horror, as time goes on, it doesn't have as much of an impact.
Yeah.
But this one, it's still the fact that you have him kind of almost like arguing and in some ways almost begging for his life. It's not like they go, okay, we're going to kill you. And then they're like, pow, you're done.
And he knows it's inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And the viewer knows it's inevitable. So to backtrack a little bit, essentially what happens is we come to the day of the May Day festivities, and everyone's dressed up in all these animal costumes and these animal masks, and they're all parading around. And Howie, he goes to the bartender character, and I guess he kind of knocks him out and takes his costume, basically.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, what was up with the candle that they put near him?
The candle?
Yeah, you know, it was like made of a hand.
Oh.
Do you remember that?
No, I don't know. A hand candle that they put near who?
Sergeant Howie, like he's about to go to sleep and they put like a hand like candle.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. I don't know.
A little weird.
Yeah, what? Yeah, were they like drugging him? Was that supposed to seduce him? I don't know.
Is that better than ASMR? Like if I get like a little hand and put
a little
that
hand candle.
Yeah, put that near my bed, like I'll sleep better at night. What's
Yeah, no. I don't know. Let's sell them on the let's take a stab at it merchandise store.
It'll be a molding of Jason's hand and John's hand. We'll see whose hand do people prefer.
I don't know.
This could get weird. Yeah.
Vote for your favorite hand. That's what this podcast has come to. We're comparing our hands.
You'd lose.
So yeah, I don't know. Well, John doesn't like my hands for some reason.
I never said that.
He thinks I have small hands.
You said you have small hands. I didn't think anything about it. You mentioned it in a way that was like a deep, dark secret. And I was like, I never look at hands.
So Willow was trying to seduce Howie. But what if she succeeded? Like, they needed a virgin to sacrifice. What was her plan there?
I think it had to do with they wanted him to be like a devout, like, Christian.
So he really had to show
that he was committed. So by him like sticking to it, that like it's almost a way for them to like punish him, but they gave him an out. Like, he could have.
If he would have just gotten busy, he was getting on that plane the next day.
He'd be fine. Honestly, yeah. I mean, I don't know if he would have left if he did that. So, like, all right, let's hang out, guys. Mayday parade.
Next thing you know, he knows he has his own part in the song.
He puts his foot up with the other guys and dances with them.
So we're in these Mayday festivities, and Sergeant Howie, he takes the bartender's outfit. Costume so he can blend in with everybody, and he's dressed as this really depressing kind of clown jester
who's not dancing with everyone else.
Yeah, he's just kind of like fumbling along, and it's
somehow
so sad.
Even yells at him like, what are you doing, come on. We know later that Lord Summerall knows. That
it's just they're messing with him.
It's like, this will make him sweat a little, make him work for it.
Oh, it's so sad. But yeah, he's so in what will ultimately be his final hours, he is dressed as this kind of bumbling jester fool.
Oh yeah.
And what ends up happening is he finds Rowan, and he is pumped because that is why he got to this island. He found the girl, and she's like, help me, help me. Mm-hmm. He takes her through this cave, and they're chasing him, and they're chasing him. And they come out the other side of this cave on the edge of this rocky cliff and surrounded by water. And they come out. He's still dressed as a clown. They come out, and who's there? It's Lord Summerisle, Willow, and, you know, somebody else. They're at the other
teacher.
They're at the other end of this cave, and Rowan runs over to them, happy as can be, saying, like, did I do a good job? Did I do good? So this little girl he's been looking for this whole time just stabbed him in the back, and he's standing there literally dressed as a fool.
So the first time you saw this, did you kind of think, you know, before they get him, maybe he could have tried to like punt that girl off the cliff? Like, you wasted all my time on this.
I guess. I mean, it'd be an interesting strategy. I don't know. They would have still killed him, I'm sure. But I don't know. He's a man of principle. But in him doing that, would that make him not as devout?
Maybe.
What if he did kill her? You know? I don't know.
Imagine how sad it would have been, though, if he's like, they're like, oh, because you're a virgin. Then he's like, goes over to Will and is like, hey.
Yeah.
And he starts trying to make moves with her. And she's like, no.
So yes, ultimately their intention is to burn him in a giant wicker man, mm-hmm. which is where the film gets its title. There's, you know, a bunch of livestock, a bunch of chickens and goats and stuff, and built up in this huge wicker man. It's probably hundreds of feet tall. And, you know, their goal is to put him in there, burn him, so the gods are happy and they have a good harvest. And this is really the point of the film where it's just like all hope is lost for this dude. The shot going back again, similar to the shot at the beginning, this kind of long telephoto lens of these islanders just kind of appearing and just kind of staring at Howie. Mm-hmm. The shot where everyone comes over the top of the hill and you just see all the animal masks kind of like pop up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just game over, you know. That it's just so haunting. Like, he has nowhere to go. Like, at first when he comes out of the cave, it's just these you know, three or four people that he could probably take if need be.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you just see this line, almost like a, you know, an army coming over the hill, all just still wearing their animal costumes. It's like, and you can see it in his face. Like he knows, like that's donezo for him.
I will give him credit though, that he starts trying to use their logic back against them. So like, he's like, well, killing me will do nothing. Next year, you're going to have to go with someone better. Lord Summerisle over here. You got to kill him next. And he's like thinking like, aha, three-dimensional chess. And what's kind of funny, though, is that Lord Summerisle like kind of doesn't seem to care. And then just says very like matter-of-factly, he just says, they will not fail. And I think that's a very like kind of haunting line.
Mm-hmm.
Where yeah. it just... I tend to think he's a little bit more aware of his manipulation with all this, but it is a very, like, I don't know. It just makes me think of, like, as a leader, you kind of have to seem very kind of devout and confident for people to follow you. And even if you're not sure of something, you have to commit to it so that way others will work hard and follow him for another year. So the very least, he has another year to figure out how to fix like the strains right. of the fruit that they're trying to make or whatever.
And in all likelihood, if it failed, he'd find a way to spin it as to why
something
it didn't
else.
Work. And he was never really in danger. So, you know, that chess move by Sergeant Howie was, you know, pretty fruitless. It didn't really... It's just like...
That's such a corny way to say that. Oh, sorry.
Pun not intended.
Yeah, so what I will say is one of the things I think the best shot of the film is actually the last shot of the film, which is you see the head of like the giant Wicker Man burning, and then it kind of crumbles forward, mm-hmm. and then you see the sun behind it. It fades out, and I was like, oh, that's a great shot.
Oh, yeah. And just the first time you see the Wicker Man, it's such a presence on screen. Mm-hmm. It's just like so towering and just so, I don't know, there's just something about it that's just really intimidating.
I think that's something, I don't know if people really remark upon it too much, but like, especially when it comes to like horror films, they always have such great like iconography.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's great. And to even add to this, you know, add insult to injury to this poor guy even more. He's here praying and singing while he's about to be burned alive. And then everybody who's watching just kind of joins hands and starts breaking out into the most joyous song of the whole film.
Oh, yeah.
And there's just like this contrast of his just impending doom with them being so joyful that they're presumably now going to get plentiful harvest. So, you know, it's just it's so tragic. Like, what a horrible way to go. Like, I think being burned alive on its own has to be top five worst ways to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, pretty universally, I think that would pop up on a lot of lists. You know, if, I don't know, Family Feud surveyed 100 people, I feel like that might be number one.
I would watch that Family Feud episode.
Yeah. But on top of that, to have just this, like, group of people, arms linked, you know, singing these songs as it's happening, like, mm-hmm. how terrible. This poor guy. But yeah, I agree. That last shot of the head falling and you just see kind of the sun going down. It's just, you know, we never find out if they had a good harvest or not.
It is interesting, though, because just, I mean, if you look at how the cults of the other two films we watched, Seventh Victim and Rosemary's Baby, they're kind of more like satanic cults. They're a little bit more, we're doing some evil things.
Right.
And we love being evil, guys. How great is this?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This group is like, hey, let's have sex all the time, drink a bunch of beers, sing songs. And once in a while, we might have to kill somebody. But
yeah. So you're saying in their defense, they did try animals first.
Yeah, yeah.
And that failed. So you're giving the cult the benefit of the doubt, just so the viewers know.
Yeah,
absolutely. You understand. You side with them.
I do.
So I guess the answer is pretty clear, but would you join this cult, John?
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking like right now it'd be pretty cool. Like they probably don't have a pandemic going on there.
That's true.
I might run the risk of them, like, you know, offending them in some way accidentally, you know, my personality.
I think there's a pretty big risk of that. And you have to remember that you are on an island. I am going to wager that you have not spent a lot of time in boats, nor will you have your own plane there. So if you piss somebody off, you're stuck, man.
You know what? I don't know. You know what? You're going to sound very foolish in a minute. I'm an excellent swimmer. You didn't know that, but I am. I'm actually, you know, contrary to popular opinion, I have always been a faster swimmer than any of my friends.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I would kick everyone's ass at racing them. And gotta say, as a chubby child, it was beautiful. So joke's on you. I could swim away if I needed to. Boom. Secondly, I don't think I would have to swim away because I would be very happy there. They, you know, they like to drink all the time. A lot of beautiful women that would probably be interested in me and my podcasting escapades. Oh, John, tell us more about this Adobe audition. That sounds very interesting.
So you're not even talking about in the context of the 70s. You're like modern day. This cult's still going. You show up with your podcast, your laptop.
Maybe they'd be into it. Maybe, you know. When, you know, Mr. Jason Barge is too busy, I'd be like, all right, hey, Lord Summerisle, you want to co-host an episode? We're talking about horror films. And he's like, of course, this sounds amazing.
Lord Summerisle would be a dope co-host, though.
Oh, I would love to learn, like, the choreography and the dance moves for all the songs. And, you know, I feel like I would be into it. I don't know. I say that, but then when they don't have air conditioning, I'm like, all right, just please sacrifice me right now. I'm done. No more.
Let me just recap for our listeners. So in an ideal world, you're joining this cult post Howie Burning.
Okay.
You like drinking and you want to learn the choreography.
Yeah.
And you think they would be impressed that you're a podcaster. And on these grounds, you're willing to join this cult.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Okay.
I like your slow delivery of that. Okay. All right. Jason Barch. Jason Douglas Barch.
I'm listening.
Isn't it Dennis?
It's Dennis.
You're not even playing along anymore. all right. Dennis, Jason Dennis Barch, would you join this cult?
So this one is, it's one of the more tempting ones that we've done. Cause there's not a lot of, there's no devil worship going on. So, okay.
Come on.
I like you. I enjoy the landscape.
Come on.
But I'm going to go with no. I'm not a big fan of musicals. That was the deal breaker for me. So they almost had me. Maybe they one of them had will. You. They almost had me, but I was.
The death was not cool. The death was fine, but like the musicals, you're like, ugh.
Yeah, no, I couldn't do it. I was almost there with you, sitting on the cliff, editing the podcast together, drinking a pint.
What if they don't have internet there? They probably don't.
Oh, they 100% don't, John. You should have considered that.
Oh, no, I don't want to do it now.
Like, what's the Wi-Fi password at the bar? And they all just break into a song about how there's no Wi-Fi.
I just, you just have
try to slink out.
I have this amazing podcast that no one listens to. Okay, well, what if I spoke with your wife, Sadie, and she's down to go? She's ready to move there. You're going to break up the marriage?
Wait, what? I said I wouldn't go. That wouldn't be breaking up the marriage.
No, I said Sadie.
Oh, she's going to go.
She's down. Her bags are packed. I already spoke to her. She's ready. And I mean, I'm just saying, if you're going to adhere to your marriage vows, I mean, I think you got to go too.
Is there like kind of a long weekend trial option for the cult? Because that could be a nice getaway. I don't know. It seems pretty scenic. That's a maybe. Pencil me in for a maybe. We'll see. Maybe I would help you build the Wicker Man and then bounce. And I'll just pretend I don't know what it's for. I'm like, oh, this seems cool. What are you guys doing with this?
All right. So, folks, what you just realized here is something that is very key to being friends with Jason. If you want Jason to do something, just lie to him and say that his wife, Sadie, is into the idea. And then he all of a sudden is like, huh, maybe that is a good idea. Maybe we'll try it out. So, you know.
It's pretty manipulative, John. maybe he would make a good cult leader. Oh, my.
All right. Anything else, Jason, or?
No, I think, can move on.
All right, guys. I just think we should. Oh, hold on. Sorry, I'm getting a phone call.
It's Lord Summerisle. He'd love to have you.
Hello? Yes, this is he. I'm actually doing the podcast right now. Yeah, oh, you spoke to him? Nick said my name? Wow. All right. You sure you want me to do that? Yeah. Okay. No, we'll do that right away. All right. Bye-bye. Click. Jason, so...
Who was sorry. That, John?
That was actually the... I didn't know about this, but that was actually the president of show business.
Oh.
Yeah. And he
the
said,
president of show business.
Yeah, he called me. He knew my name. And he said that Nicolas Cage spoke to him.
Okay.
Yeah, and apparently we can't end the podcast without going over the Wicker Man remake.
Oh!
Yeah!
How could we forget?
So we gotta
I'm
do
so
that
glad,
now.
I'm so glad the president of show business had your number.
Yeah, I didn't catch his name. So, anyway, Jason, we both watched the Wicker Man remake.
We did.
Was it worth our time?
Oh, absolutely. It was worth our time. Absolutely. There are some similarities. There are a lot of artistic liberties. And there's just a lot of letting Nick Cage do his own thing, I think. I don't know. It's just, they're so different. It's, I don't know, man. It's... The one main difference to me is, so in the remake, they make it so the Howie character, whose name is what? Something Malice? Malice?
Yeah.
Nick Cage. So the Howie character, his ex-fiance is part of this cult, and she writes him a letter. And ultimately what ends up happening is it's revealed that Rowan is his daughter. So he's extra motivated.
Also, and he sees her maybe in the beginning.
I don't. What was that? I did not get that connection. What was happening there?
I don't know.
The beginning, a mom and a little girl die in a fiery car wreck that he witnesses. And she has a striking resemblance to Rowan. And
yeah.
There's flashbacks throughout.
I got to tell you, though, one of the hardest I've laughed in the movie was when he's on like the boat and he sees a little girl that looks like the girl who got killed. And then he hears the semi truck go by and you see her get hit by the, by the semi truck again. And it's like, it's so matter of fact. It's like, what?
Oh, it's just so wild. And it's like the townspeople, they just seem really annoyed by his presence, whereas in the original they're all so just accepting and so nonchalant about everything because they know it's game over for him.
Yeah
Like they know his plane's not running, they know he's not getting off that island, so they're just like messing with him, they're just playing along. And in the remake they're all just really annoyed by his presence. Like, why is he there, why is he investigating this? And it's
maybe that's like the like modernized version is like, oh, well, if your mayor made you put on this whole like act and like show for this one character for like the weekend, you'd be kind of like, oh, my God, I got to do that. That's this weekend. That's our May Day weekend. Yeah, we're supposed to be having fun this weekend. We got to do this stuff for this guy.
So I think that they tried to make it so he has like a personal tie to the island, and they took it even further, saying that he is Rowan's daughter. So doesn't that make it all the more heartbreaking for the original that Howie was just there doing his job? Like,
he's a good guy.
He had no dog in this fight. He was just doing his job. He was going by the book. He didn't have, you know, an estranged ex-fiance that was writing him, telling him to come. There's no possibility that Rowan could be his daughter. And it's just like, I feel like it makes it way more tragic that he was just there trying to be the good guy. And like, instead of like Nick Cage having his like, you know, own personal issues dragged into everything.
Well, it's also like Nick Cage seems to take out his frustration way more on the townspeople.
Yeah, he gets very annoyed by them.
Well, the one girl he just beats the shit out of. And like, this is the girl that like, I don't know, 20 minutes earlier was like, take me with you.
Yeah.
And he's like, let me like karate kick you into the fucking wall. And it's pretty like, all right. And instead of the clown suit, he's in a bear suit and like just is knocking over little girls with his paws.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another, they didn't play into the Mayday stuff and the ritual stuff and the costume stuff nearly as much as the original. And they had a longer running time. I felt like they really could have expanded on that.
Well, so there's also, so they, in the differences between the cults. So in the remake, Ellen Burstyn is the head of the cult, and it's mostly like the cult's mostly made up of like the women of the village, and the men don't speak or something, you know, but like it's not really, there's like an interesting like idea there that's never fully realized of what like what they're trying to convey there. They don't really do anything with it. They just kind of like bring up some ideas and then let Nick Cage be very weird. And
I was wondering like kind of why they kind of flipped the gender roles, if there was kind of a bigger meaning to that, but I never really kind of made that connection.
Like they make like Nicolas Cage very upset that the women are in charge and only use men for breeding. And he's like, what do you mean? You know, like he's very upset about it. And I was just like, but I mean, it could be, maybe they like that. Maybe it's less pressure for them. I don't know.
Yeah.
They don't really convey much. So it's hard to tell, you know, what's going on with all that.
Well, and they also kind of, you know, missed the boat on like one of the more interesting elements of the original, like we touched on, was kind of the contrast between this devout Christian character and these pagan rituals. And in the remake, there's no sort of, you know, devout Christianity or anything with Cage's character. He's not a virgin, and it's just like he doesn't.
Oh. I was gonna say the main difference is with this new one is Nick Cage fucks.
Yeah, he does. He's
like, we're gonna make that literal in the plot. You know, yeah. It.
What if that was like his demand and they had to rewrite it? Like, well, he's like, look, guys, I gotta have a kid in this. Like, can you maybe make Rowan my kid?
Listen, I want them to know that I have a lot of sex. So we definitely have to have a child that is mine.
One of the more silly plot points is that he's very allergic to bees, and he brings along bee specific EpiPens, which I didn't know were a thing. And it's just like,
only two of them.
Yeah, only two of them. And he's being like, you know, the bees come to get him throughout the film.
I love how they have him, like, he accidentally walks into like a field that's got all these bee, like, I don't know, whatever you call them, colonies or whatever. And then instead of him like running in the opposite direction, he like rolls around in the field more, getting further into like these, like all these bees. He's like, whoa, bees, what am I going to do? Oh, I got to bring this up. Okay. Two scenes that I found very funny. And I mentioned this to you through text, is he brings his ex-girlfriend up to like some room where the girl was, and he pulls open the drawer and he looks at the drawer and he goes, this is the last place you saw her.
he's like, where? She's like, he's like, where was the last place you saw her? She's like, that desk right there. He goes right over to the desk and like opens up the drawer. Like, nope, she's not in there.
Okay, next scene that I thought was really funny. Okay, so he grabs the girl the little girl near the end and runs off with her into like the it was the woods, right? And she like she's not slowing down, so he's got to like catch up to her. So he catches up to her and he doesn't realize that she made a U-turn at some point and went right back out of the field into like the field again. And then he's like, what? Like, it's supposed to be this huge surprise that she did that. And then the little girl's like, did I do good, mommy? And it's just like, you didn't really try at all, actually. You just ran in the circle.
And that whole end scene is not nearly as foreboding as the original.
No.
Just like, even in the way it's shot and everything. It's just, and kind of, I feel like at the end of that, they kind of just over-explain everything that has happened so far. Whereas in the original, you know, Lord Summerisle's like, it's so matter of fact. It's like, you know, like you're here, everything's aligning. Like, mm-hmm. this is why we brought you here. Time to burn. And then it just felt so contrived. And
also Nicolas Cage's character, who is a cop, who has conceivably used his gun before, can't tell the difference between a gun that has no bullets in it versus
I thought about like what's his end game though? There's like 150 people there. He's got what, 8 rounds? What's a gun hold? 8 rounds, something like that? 10 rounds?
It depends. But yeah, like I was thinking though, like, wouldn't it have been cooler if they put in blanks or something? Maybe he takes a shot at Ellen Burstyn's character, boom, and you're going like, did he just shoot her? And then it's like, oh wait, she switched the bullets. It could be a little bit of a fake out or something. Instead of like, he clicks it, click, click, click. Oh no, they took out my bullets.
John, if you were in charge, there would have been blanks in that gun. I have no doubt. Everything that was interesting about the original was kind of just glossed over in the remake. And, you know, I feel like everything they added just kind of like bogged it down and made it kind of meander a little bit. They didn't play into the May Day festivities nearly as much, or the outfits. And I don't know.
What did you think of the bees scene?
I don't know, man. It's just so goofy. It's like, I don't know.
I love that the director probably was feeling like, you know what? This is a great moment to bring back the EpiPen that wasn't used.
Yeah. Well, do you want to explain the scene for our listeners and kind of, and it didn't end up being released in the theatrical version, correct?
Yeah, we had to watch the unrated cut, but I feel like it's kind of a bit of a meme online. So I think maybe depending on who it is, like they maybe have seen it, but basically they go up to Nick Cage, break both of his legs, and then put this like cage around his head and then put all the bees in. And I guess they spent maybe $2 on the CGI for the bees because it doesn't look real in any way. And it's weird to think of like that was in 2006, which
it's like they just Googled like free bee graphics and like kind of threw it in.
But him freaking out to it. Oh, no, not the bees. Not the bees. I've seen that scene a number of times. I got to say, though, in the context of the movie, it doesn't really make much more sense than what
it doesn't. What's the point? You know, I get breaking his legs so he won't get out of the Wicker Man. But the bees, come on.
Yeah.
That was another thing. It wasn't like quite bad enough to be like a midnight movie type thing. And I think that might have been what frustrated me, is because it didn't improve on the original. It had some interesting ideas, but it certainly didn't improve on it. But it wasn't bad enough to justify like the so bad it's good tag.
Yeah. I mean, as it stands, it was, I don't want to say a waste of time, but, you know, it was fun for us to talk about on here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So what do we got coming up next?
All right. Next thing we're watching, we will be reviewing Suspiria, the original.
Oh, good one.
Oh, yeah. And you get to rewatch it on your wonderful Blu-ray copy.
Yes, John was kind enough to buy me the amazing Blu-ray restoration of that film. It looks awesome.
It's very sexy. John's a good friend. All right.
Do you want me to say that so you can edit it in?
Yes.
John's a good friend.
Thank you.
John's a great friend.
Thank you.
John's the best friend. You can just pick one. I don't care.
All right, that does it for this week's episode. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe.
All right, guys. Stab you later.
Stab you later, guys. How did it get burned? I don't know.